Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. Did you look at today for this?
Quite shamefully, I will admit, I was actually driving back from San Antonio for work yesterday, and I was not following along as closely as normal, and I did not even realize there was a carryover. So at least now there are daily activities on tap.
Well, to give everybody a quick synopsis, it starts in the fourth race, eight race card today in the Big A. You got a state bred maiden special going a mile, and that's a 7-horse field. A couple of first time starters, one from Linda Rice, one from Michelle Nevin. Then you go to a 8,000 claimer going the mile, 4 and ups. That's a 9-horse field, and you've got a 5-2 Rudy Rod favorite, Where's Rudy, and then Gullo and Linda Rice have co-second choices at 7-2, Captain Frost and Business Cycle. The third leg is a state bred allowance, and that's a mile, 4 and ups, an 8-horse field led by Gargan with 7-5 on Playwright, so maybe there's one to lean on, although BB Banker for Rudy as well in there, 3-1. Then there's the highly anticipated feature I discussed a little bit with Dave Grenig yesterday. This is a 7-horse group going a mile. In fact, so I'm just looking, the entire sequence are 1-mile races, that's a gift to the figure makers. This is a group that starts with Sir Winston trying to prep for his international aspirations. 8-5 favorite. Leotone in here, though, as well. Musical America, Rob Attriss. Gary's got Small Bear. And there's also Brass Compass from Mark Cassie. Bon Raison, who runs every 6 days.
2 hours.
It's unbelievable. And Roaming Union in there, too, for Michelle Nevin. It's a good group of 7, and it ends with a maiden 25, a group of 10. So this feels like a very approachable sequence, 7 by 9 by 8 by 7 by 10, with a close to a $50,000 carryover. You would have to think there'll be 250,000-300,000 added to that. So a pretty good takeout neutralizing situation today at Aqueduct.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. There's a couple of scratches, nothing outrageously significant. There are 3 scratches in the nightcap, and Captain Frost is out in the 5th. But it is definitely a good sequence for this time of year as well. So one thing that's been clear about these 8 race cards is that the late pick 5 doesn't really handle very much. Probably is in danger of carrying more days than you'd ever see the early one. I think the early one carries. There are lunar eclipses more often than there is an early pick 5 carryover at any NIRA track. So it'll be good. It's a good way to spice up the day, and of course Friday means Stronach 5 day as well. So good pick 5 action. Although am I just reading that Golden Gate is canceled all weekend?
Golden Gate is out for the rest of the week. There is a gas main. It's almost this almost has a feel to the plot line of what was the second Dirty Harry where the anarchist the anarchist group right they're going to kidnap the mayor or whatever the hell happens, and that's that, you know, when Dirty Harry started to jump the shark, it has that kind of feel to it. You know, it's sort of like, I know Jay Hovde's listening. He's going to help me, and he's already thinking about it, I'm sure. The Killing. This is The Killing meets Dirty Harry with the racetrack and a gas line disaster. We'll see. They're scuttled. So no Stronach 5. Your only focus is the NIRA carryover.
Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, people are probably going to find it ironic that I sort of mock the Stronach group as much as I do, but I do enjoy the Stronach 5. That's without question. Would be fun. But alas, next week.
Exactly.
Take a week off.
Yeah. Perfect. And by the way, since I mentioned Hovde in movies, yesterday, the Gene Hackman's birthday, 90th birthday, and seems like all of racing chipped into that discussion, including you.
I did. I just made sure that if you were putting a top 10, you got you got the birdcage on there somewhere, because that was a very underrated Gene Hackman role. And while he probably takes on one of the, you know, lesser roles that of all the people in the movie, he was outstanding. And I mean, I'm in agreement. I think Travis replied and said French Connection is the best, and I'm in agreement there. I'm a big French Connection fan, so Popeye Doyle's pretty tough to beat. But yeah, good to see Gene Hackman, 90 years old, amazing.
Well, and you bringing up the birdcage, and I'll just tie in, you know, how often his comedic turns, you know, as much as we think of him as a dramatic, you know, for dramatic roles, and quite a few military roles as well, he could be very funny. And very frequently, I had to throw in, I made an impromptu top 10 with, you know, with no order, but I had to include his scenes in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which is the, I mean, as funny as the movie is, that 3 minutes or however long it is, as the blind, you know, as the blind man, and is hysterical. It's just tremendous. I love it.
Yeah, no, he had a wide range, and certainly was not limited in any sense. So yeah, it's good because it seems still going strong.
Well, I don't think he's doing any work.
Yeah, I doubt it. Nineties, you know, I'm trying to get to half of that.
Well, Orson Bean, I mean, Orson Bean's as busy as he's ever been, it seems. Every time I look up, I see, and he's got to be close to 100.
Yeah, gotta be. I wouldn't even begin to know. That's yeah.
I'm telling you. Let's see. I'm going to look it up right now. Well, no, he's actually. I tell you, he's only a year older than my father. He's 91. It just it feels like he's been around for 100 years. Pretty funny. All right, let's. For those that didn't see it, poke around my timeline, and you'll see the discussion. It went off in a million directions, including Frederick Forrest getting a few some love. The conversation. I will argue. By the way, I love French Connection, but I will argue that the conversation is his greatest performance.
That could be, yeah. I mean, I think each has their own appeal in different ways. But yeah, no, I don't think that's a crazy opinion at all.
For those that have never seen it, it's a very quiet film. Not espionage, surveillance. Look it up. I'm sure you can find it on demand. Well, it's Pick Five on demand, the Naira Pick Five, Nick, and it starts with the Withers, then the Nightcap tomorrow, and then the 7th, 8th, and 9th at Oaklawn. Let's take a look.
Yeah, it's nice to see this back, of course, and the, you know, low takeout wager. We clamor all the time for lower takeout on anything, so it's nice to see this back with a 15% takeout, and obviously the hub is Naira. The post time changes again tomorrow at Aqueduct. It's going to be 1 o'clock Eastern. It is post time roulette, so you want to check each day and see when it is. I think on Sunday it's 1:20 Eastern. So this sequence gets started a little bit later. And the Withers is, you know, since the wintertime three-year-old schedule has been restructured a little bit, the Withers has been a race where you kind of had some ahead-of-the-curve three-year-olds that might be more interested in distance. And interestingly, this year, of course, you have a recent Remsen winner that's already been the mile and an eighth, and you have another horse that's going to be a prime contender that's been the mile and an eighth as well. So it's generally for the more route, obviously inclined, and I think this year you're going to see those horses kind of converge with ones that are stretching out. And the big difference between this race and the aforementioned Remsen is that Schottky was able to get away with a pretty favorable pace scenario. He was in the midst of a pretty favorable pace scenario in the Remsen, and that's not going to happen here. So that's going to be a bit of an issue, I think, in that, not that he's a horse that probably can't be effective coming from a little bit off of it, it's this conversation that we have quite frequently, which is that horses are better when they're alone on the lead. It goes without saying, and it's very, very clear of horses with any appreciable amount of early speed. So it's going to be a different scenario for Schottky. Is he still good enough to win maybe without having the early lead? We're going to find out, because, I mean, you would think that Monday morning quarterback coming off of a three-quarter length win in the heft at Laurel, where he tracked a very, very fast pace. You would imagine that he's going to be sent to the lead. A new commission should have some amount of early speed on the stretch out. So too should Vanzi, coming from a couple of stalls outside of Shotsky. And all of this would lead you to believe that things are really going to play into the hands of Jose Lascano on Portos. And you don't want to get overly excited about a big win in the slop, but boy, Portos was really good last time, drawing off to win by almost 11. He dispatched that field very easily. He's a horse that looks like he's always had some talent. And Todd Pletcher clearly has wanted him to go long the whole time. He debuted the horse at a mile and an eighth, and he came running late. So I think there's a lot to like. I think we'll probably hear some dopey commentary afterwards from people about how this is a Belmont horse. And look, he could end up being a Belmont horse. Obviously,
I said that. I said that to Jay. I said that to Jay Pridman already. Yeah.
There you go. Right. So, well, and I say dopey in the sense that everybody's looking for a Belmont horse in June, or in January. And so there's you know, that's what is fun about seeing some of these pedigrees and projecting who might be great, you know, better at a long distance. So I think this is I think this is his race to lose, and I'm anticipating him running well against graded state competition. And while I was on Shotsky in the Remsen and was excited to see him get the job done that day, I think that if you didn't have him that day at almost 9-1, then you really shouldn't be lining up to bet him at around 2-1 tomorrow in what looks like a much less favorable scenario.
How many do you have to use to get through and get the pick five started?
I'm going to use Shotsky just out of respect, but the main horses that I'm going to use are going to be Max Player and Portos. I'm going to play just for the pace scenario. And while we've not always seen Linda Rice do, this is a rare spot for her, being in a three-year-old race with a horse that might be long range on the Kentucky Derby trail. I think she's obviously capable of doing anything, and we've seen her barn really reach new heights in the last couple of years. So I will use Max Player for that reason. If any of the other horses that I mentioned that should be showing speed stretching out win, then I just kind of have to tip my cap to them. I can't really envision that. So main for me would be 3 and 8, and I would definitely back up with the 5.
The ninth cap, the ninth, is a 8 claimer going 6.5. It would be nice to get through with, you know, minimal. O'Shea, Can You See is going to be a very short price. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, O'Shea, Can You See, is going to be a big price, as you mentioned, and I think it's mainly figuring out how much you want to help him. He was an impressive winner last time, but of course this had a lot to do with the big pace that he ran into, and we'll see if he gets that kind of setup again. He hadn't always been that effective on a sloppy track, so it was nice to see him run better in there. His best races really had come on dry surfaces. He's also a horse that had been a little unlucky in terms of pace setups prior to that. When you're looking around this field for who the alternatives are, it gets really rough, especially when you see how poorly Rally Cap ran last time. And this is a horse that particular race, I remember being very annoyed that day because I made a big bet on Family Biz, and Rally Cap was supposed to push London House on the lead and really just had nothing. He was rated, but he was also never really involved. And I think it's beginning to come clear that Rally Cap's career is on its, it looks like he's on his way out. So I think it would be a big reclamation project on Linda Rice's part to get him back going again. And then you look through the race, and really the big concern is whether it's going to be enough speed. So you may have to end up using Rally Cap, I guess, defensively as the potential speed, but boy, it seems like a race where you can lean on O'Shea, Can You See, and figure that he's going to probably be able to run down anybody who's out there. I guess there could be a little bit of support for Javelin. I'm not a huge fan of his, but he's been running okay, and this is not a spot where there's obviously a whole lot of depth. So we might see the drop from 12.5 to 8 work in his favor a little bit, and I think you could probably let him find his way onto a backup ticket. So I'm going to use O'Shea, Can You See, as an A, and Rally Cap, and Javelin as B's.
Which makes sense. I've got Affection. Le Gros Bill, a horse that I've just kind of rooted for from the start, and just hasn't really, you know, he's got 2 wins. He's been a modest horse, but he certainly was named with great aspirations. Le Gros Bill being the nickname of Nick?
I don't know. Something Montreal related, I'm guessing.
Correct.
Which expo?
No. Was it? Which Canadien?
Oh, it must have been Big Bill.
Jean Béliveau.
Oh, okay.
Le Gros Bill.
Yeah, see, I'm way behind the 8-ball when it comes to any kind of hockey trivia. I'm a product of the South in that respect. But I need to up my game.
Well, you may. I've been very much constrained because I know that if anything Astro related comes up, it will set you off. So I've completely avoided it, and you should be very appreciative.
So yeah.
I understand you've taken that very personally. It's business, and you're taking it personal.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it, yeah. But I've not traded in my 2017 World Series hat, though, I can tell you that.
No. Well, it doesn't taint them at all, like the president, like the owner says. Oh, it doesn't taint that championship, but not the least. It turns to the... You know what I got to send you? Did you see the analysis that the one guy did that he went back and
yeah, it was a friend of mine sent that to me the other day. So I guess there were 1,100 pitches where they heard the crack of the trash can. It's pretty much the most disgracefully idiotic, comprehensive, thorough job that's ever been done in terms of trying to cheat. It really is unbelievable. But I'll tell you, you heard it here first. I think this whole Dusty Baker 1 year signing thing is because I think Hinch will be the manager in 2021. I really do. I think that his plan is to just let the dust settle and then go right back to it. Dusty Baker is such a departure from what they've done as an organization, analytics wise. Without getting into that topic too much, but it's been a dark few weeks. It's not been great, but
pleasant.
It was. I remind all the Dodger fans out there, and they can give me all the hate mail on Twitter that they want. But there was no trash can at Dodger Stadium in Game 7 when everybody banged Yu Darvish around and won the game easily 5-1. So just reminding you of that.
I love it. Let's turn to the last three legs of this pick five. Things move to Oaklawn at 5:09 for the seventh race. And this is 6 furlongs, a money allowance group. And this race has got, it's got some... Got some quality about it. It's funny. We just talked with Hammer. He brought up the Lone Sailor running, and here's a race where you see a horse like Principe Guilherme that was given the 3-year-old season, cameos, and there were some expectations, and he's had a useful career. He's made $200,000, only run 15 times, but he comes in here off the claim for Diodoro, taken away from Steve Aspison, and for 50 at the end of Churchill's season. What do we think?
It's a good field. It's one of the typical old Oaklawn type races now, where you've got a big field, you should have a good pace, and looks, all things considered, like it'll be a pretty fairly run race. So I think you can go a lot of different directions. I think you probably want to use horses that are going to offer some value, obviously, which you should try to do every time. But I think the favorites are, it's not that they're suspect, but they're just not all that appealing. So I think having as many options as possible really is the optimal approach. I was very intrigued by Sovereign Impact. Cipriano Contreras is a trainer who very quietly does some good work in the Midwest, and he's had a couple of nice upset winners at Oaklawn over the course of the last few years, including Rated R Superstar in last year's Essex on that big Rebel card that really derailed a lot of pick fives, a lot of cross-country pick fives and Oaklawn ones, and he's already got a win at the meet. And Sovereign Impact is a horse that feels like he's at his best when he can settle and make one run. He's a little cheap, but I think the difference between some of those higher level $50,000 beaten claimers and this money allowance with the optional tag is really minimal, and I think if Martin Garcia can negotiate a trip from the inside, this is a horse you should see moving late, and it does look like there's a lot of early zip on paper. I mean, if this race stays intact, you've got Rocky's Warrior that's going to show speed, Once We Were Brothers has speed, Abano Solo down on the inside, towards the outside, the Lullaby Bling is very, very quick, so it feels like they're really going to move. Principe Guilherme is the horse to beat, I would say, coming off the claim, having won impressively last time. It's interesting to me that Diodoro is going to put the blinkers on this horse off of the win, and it's interesting not necessarily because he may or may not need them, but because this has been a very, very successful move for Diodoro over the last 5 years. He's winning at about a 30% clip with a nice ROI, so we'll see if he might just maybe thinking that this horse wants to lay back and make one run. It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about him on the Derby Trail, as you referenced, so there's clearly a lot of talent there, and this is the kind of barn that gets a mid to high price claimer and really starts to get the best out of them. When a barn like Steve Asmussen's, as the stock has improved there, really doesn't quite have the, you don't want to say he doesn't have the time, but the energy and effort that somebody like Diodoro is going to put into getting this horse to the right spots probably seems like it's a little bit more significant.
A couple of horses that we should at least touch on. You mentioned Ban Solo kind of in passing and has got some speed, and not only has speed, draws inside and is going to put the blinkers on. Asmussen bookends this field with Ban Solo inside and Fluminense on the outside. Ban Solo is a play and a horse in a spot, Nick, that I always like to pause. To me, it's a very big handicapping, not a maxim, but at least for me, it's something that I'd look to. This is a horse that's been away since May of last year as a three-year-old. So now he comes back. He's been gone 7.5+ months. Now he's four, and he's a colt. He ran respectably as a two-year-old, gets the abbreviated season where he, you know, ran in the Bachelor and then in the Golden Circle at Prairie Meadows, and something went awry. This is a horse that could come back and use this as a launching spot. And when you're looking at his PPs from last spring, you had better add in some maturity factor projection, because it won't take much for him to suddenly be not just competitive in a group like this, but be a stake horse again right quick.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think probably the biggest concern with him, of course, is the inside post, in that, you know, their hand is going to be forced right from the start. But I think if you're going to trust somebody to navigate their way through it, I think Ricardo Santana is probably among the best, at least at this particular spot. So one good thing, I think, as well, is that the horses immediately to his outside probably won't have his kind of early speed,
right,
at least not Sovereign Impact. So if he can get out a little bit off the inside and maybe not be quite as intimidated by horses maybe cascading down from outside towards the rail, then it might be a little bit easier. But yeah, I mean, we've seen, and I know it's a clear, just speaking of speed figures, it's a clear thoroughgraph angle to take a good look at these kind of horses, because generally the 3-4 and 2-3 progression is huge. So if you can take that, if you can sort of project that yourself and keep that in some kind of perspective, then yeah, these horses are good bets, and this is a horse who I think will offer plenty of value.
And any thoughts on Fluminense as well? I mean, to me, it feels like this is a because he, you know, he's been away since the West Virginia Derby, and he kept good company last year. They even, you know, tried him in things like the Penn Mile, and you go back even to the trip up to Woodbine as a two-year-old. This is a horse that also had, you know, some quality about him, a $400,000 more than ready, it's a buyback essentially, because Stud TNT had also bred him. This for me, even though he has won at 6 furlongs, it feels like this is the first step back toward longer assignments.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, actually. I would actually be a lot more inclined to bet Fluminense than Ban Solo, only because of the expected race flow. And I think this horse is a sprinter. I think this is a great cutback. And I also think it's a little bit of a cheeky move on Asmussen's part, having had this horse at Sam Houston and now bringing him up. If you look at his sprint races, including that race off the layoff in May of last year, I know it was a relatively weak field, but he ran very well. And something similar to that, I think being outside, he's going to get out-sprinted a little bit and be able to make one run. I would definitely be inclined to use him. The thing that always threw me off about this horse is that off of a 76 buyer fig breaking his maiden at Churchill, he sent him to run on the turf at Woodbine. It was just a very odd placement for a barn that's very, very good spotting their two-year-olds. It's very, very good in general. So I just wondered if maybe Asmussen wasn't really sure exactly what this horse is or what to make of it. But if he wants to commit him to being a one-turn, sprinting, almost miling type, I think that might be his best trip. So I think he's going to run well, and I think you'll probably end up seeing a little bit more than that 9-2 morning line.
Well, I mean, there's plenty. You know, you look at that at the breeding between More Than Ready and the elusive quality mare, the Brazilian, you know, comes from Bon Rafaela, and I understand the concept of some grass, you know, the the whole rest of the family was, you know, with all the mayor's siblings, and they were, you know, there were a bunch of stake horses, including Out of Control. She's a half to Out of Control, Mona Raffaella. So it's a terrific race. I mean, and so this is what's amazing about Oaklawn in general is that, you know, our inclination is to be looking at stake races all the time. And, you know, here's a race that, you know, it's not a stake, but boy, it's got a really interesting cast. Who give us the A's and the B's on this, Nick?
I mean, A's for sure for me are going to be Sovereign Impact and Prince Big Yerm and Fluminense. So, I mean, I'm going to use 2-9-11, and I'll probably keep it, but I'm going to keep as many options open as possible as far as backups. I would definitely say 1, 4, 6, 7 at this point. And I have to decide what to do with Curate. I'm not over the moon with Curate. I know that the start hurt him last time. He's obviously got a lot of back class, but he's been the type that really has been most effective when he's had the lead. You have to use him as a backup, I would say. So this is a race where you're going to end up going relatively wide. But that's a good thing about being able to narrow down the nightcap at Aqueduct with O'Shea Can You See and still having some options.
Can we single Amy's Challenge in the American Beauty?
You know, my only concern with that would be that Irish Mischief really figures to get a great trip from the outside. Amy's Challenge's races at Oakland, though, make her look very, very tough. It's going to be very hard to believe that she'll lose this race. She's apparently been training forwardly, as she's always done, and the blinkers are going on. So, if anything, she might be even quicker early, which that feels like it could just be a little too much for these horses. I know that Mount Brave is pretty quick. I would imagine that Ricardo Santana wants to just stalk and really doesn't want to get after Amy's Challenge too much. So, I mean, if you see Amy's Challenge put any separation on this field, then it's over. Irish Mischief is I think, her biggest threat. Obviously, that was a much weaker group that she beat last time. She beat him like a drum and now comes in off a bit of a layoff. It's been a slow start to the Oakland meeting for Brad Cox again. We saw this happen last year, and then all of a sudden he went on about a 50% tear for a matter of 2 weeks. So I would loan Amy's Challenge and probably loan back up Irish Mischief, even though I'm a little surprised but a little intrigued by seeing Special Relativity in this field. And the interesting thing about that is her best races, obviously, almost all of her races have been around one turn, have been at a sprint distance. She actually ran really well in the Pippin last week. She was closer, I think, to a very, very fast pace than we would anticipate and ended up staying on really well and outfinished K-Ren for second. So she's kind of an interesting cutback on the quick layoff, but may end up just being a minor player at best. I think her best chances would be if there was a big thunderstorm because she moves forward, I think, quite a bit on a wet track. So I would use her probably as a backup as well, and just the odd chance that this thing becomes chaotic.
Well, and the one horse in addition we should probably make a note of is Raintree Starlet, the Brian Williamson, Mrs. Van Eyre, Get Stormy filly, who looked last year at this time at Oaklawn like she was really on her way to becoming something, and then it kind of blew the turn, you know, facing the heavy heads and the Honeybee, and she seemed to kind of right the ship a little bit when reintroduced as a turf sprinter, and so Williamson pretty much put her away for the fall, and I'm kind of a fan of hers, and we'll see if she comes back as a better four-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to have to improve a ton to beat Amy's Challenge and Irish.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, there's a chance. Obviously, her affinity for Oaklawn is a credit to her, and her opening weekend win last year was very sharp. So yeah, we'll see. She's obviously back at the trip that's going to be best for her. So if not tomorrow, then I think down the line, there's no doubt that this is a good group, and there's a few other horses that are kind of dipping their toes into the stakes waters that have been effective against weaker, and we'll see how they do now facing tougher company.
I love it. And the nightcap, straight allowance, and a really fun group in here. What are we doing in the ninth?
I really like American Mandate in here. I think that American Mandate's a horse that had ended up in some relatively tough spots early in his career, ran against some good horses. It looked like he was on his way to breaking his maiden at Aqueduct a little over a year ago, was run down by High Call, and Spun to Run was third in that race. So kind of amazing to think where those horses are respectively a year or so later. And then came back and beat Grump's Little Tots, who ended up being a perfectly useful allowance horse. And since then, he's bounced around a little bit, but I think his sixth place finish behind Honest Mischief was a better effort than he probably initially got credit for. And having lost last time to Silver Seeker, who came right back and won at Aqueduct, albeit against New York Bred Company, but I thought that was a very sharp effort. American Mandate apparently has been training well, according to what you hear. And I think that there's a pretty decent chance that he'll be effective at this kind of level. Candy Cornell is probably in many ways the horse to beat. He didn't really make out great at the post position draw. And I would encourage anybody who doesn't watch Oaklawn all that much to watch how difficult it can be breaking from the inside there. It's very hard to negotiate a good trip when you're, especially when you have his kind of style, where you're going to be coming from a little bit off of it. I bet a horse last week that had broken from the inside in the second dead heat race, the one horse that was trained by Doug Anderson. And Alex Berzer actually gave him a phenomenal ride to use him out of the gate and then get into a comfortable spot, get between horses off the inside to be able to then run down the horse that he dead heated with. So that's kind of a textbook on what you have to do. So we'll see if he can get there, really trying to probably weave his way in and out. And I think Tough Love is a dangerous horse who's coming back off a brief layoff, did not have a clean trip at all last time at Churchill, finished up very well for Brian Williamson, and now comes back off a bit of a layoff. So I didn't think that this was quite as daunting as some of the other races in the sequence. I think you mainly want to be on horses that can, if other than American Mandate, horses that can make up ground late. And so for me, that was really mainly Candy Cornell and Tough Love, who I'm hoping is ridden in similar fashion. Sig Alert as well.
Sig Alert.
Tough Love is ridden in similar fashion to how he was last time, even with the bad trip, and is able to sit back and make one run. Yeah, Sig Alert's a must-use second off the layoff. Obviously ended up trying to rally inside last time, and I'm sure badly needed that race. And having seen some of John Sadler's horses run well at this meet so far, I think you can definitely be a little intrigued by him.
We're looking forward to that sequence, and I'm the host for Beat the Host this week, and I was focusing on the Santa Anita Gulfstream races, but then when I printed these out, Nick, I said, I got to do this, because I had already looked at the Withers, and the Nightcap was no big deal, and then I started looking at these races. I thought this is a really fun sequence, and it's not going to take much. I mean, you could get some second and third choices in here, and a couple of, $11 types that would really put the spurs to this pick five tomorrow. The 8th and 9th from Aqueduct, the 7th, 8th, and 9th from Oaklawn.
It is a fun sequence, no doubt. It's great to have this wager back, and hopefully we'll talk about it most weeks and see if we can't find a way to hit it. It was elusive last year for some bit of it, but boy, if you can connect on it, it was very, very lucrative.
Always great. NTAM 1215. Nick Tamaro, everybody. Nick, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend.
We're staying right here. Not a break to be seen, and that might be true all the way around to the finish of the show. James Scully is standing by. Then we'll talk to Jeff Siegel and Ed DeRosa and Mike Welch. James, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
James, Kentucky Derby report starting to get serious and starting to get lengthier with each week before we talk about what's going on for the weekend. Let's get your thoughts about the Smarty Jones last week.
Yeah, the Smarty Jones was running a mile on a muddy track at Oaklawn Park. That track played really favorable to speed all day. I think seven of the nine winners were up either on or up close to the lead, including the race right after it, a 12-1 wire-to-wire maiden winner. And Gold Street had the best speed. He had been ridden in his last couple of races by Ricardo Santana, who had to take off to ride his stablemate, Kentucky Jockey Club winner Silver Prospector, and Asmussen tabbed Martin Garcia to ride Gold Street, and he got him right out of the gate. I mean, he was like a half length, a couple strides out of the gate, about a length and a half clear going in the first turn. The rivals tightened it up a little bit on the far turn, but he threw off into the short stretch and won pretty comfortably. The runner-up three technique, I will say this, he got off to a terrible start, made a decent move into contention on the turn, and then held second, so he's a horse that could keep progressing or developing off that race. One takeaway, perhaps negative takeaway, involves Silver Prospector, who never really fired, even though he won that Kentucky Jockey Club over a sloppy track. Wound up fourth behind Shoplifted in third. So not an encouraging debut at all for Silver Prospector. And we'll see with Gold Street. I mean, next time he's going to have to stretch out to at least a mile in the 16th, figures to potentially catch more pressure. And all three of his wins have come on off track. So still the jury's out on him. He still has much to prove.
Well, and the off-track aspect of, and I didn't really get into it much with Hammer earlier, but you know the way that track played the opening day at Oaklawn, everybody should be have printed out those nine charts and read through them and watched replays, because anybody that was trying to rally, and particularly rally wide, you were a chicken in a pot. I mean, there was no way anybody was going to get to horses down inside on opening day at Oaklawn. So when you're looking for bet backs, this is how you do it. You go through and you find horses that took the worst of it against that bias and against the situation, and wait for them to run back. And they're going to be dirtied up. They're going to be they're going to look like they're hopeless the next time they come back. And there you go, and you pop under those circumstances.
Yeah, so we have our first big weekend of the year on tap this Saturday. I got three preps. In 2 weeks, we'll move in. The Risen Star will be the first race that offers 50 points to the winner. The point totals in these qualifiers will continue to go up or increase over the next few months. And really looking forward to this Saturday. I will say I thought all three races did not get the deepest of fields, but definitely a couple horses in Thousand Words and Tizzalaw. Very excited to see run, because they have serious aspirations for this year's Kentucky Derby.
Well, let's dive into it. You want to go Florida, New York, or New York, Florida, but take us through.
All right, well, I'll start in New York. I mean, it's the Withers. It's been a mile and an eighth. You get Shotsky in there. Took advantage of a clear lead last time and a slow pace that day. I think a lot of people could see he's not making the lead in here. Monday morning QB could very well show speed. The mile and eighth distance is a legitimate concern for him. There's some other speed horses in there. A lot of people, I think Portos, he's 3-1 on the morning line. Definitely a type who could be progressing. Maybe he's like gaining some tactical speed, but I do have some concerns with him because he really got away within two races. Just really slow paces the last two times. Two starts back at Aqueduct, he was on the lead going 51 and 116 early splits, and then last time in a five horse field, he couldn't make the front through a 49-3. He was able to sit close and then look really good drawing off. But he's the type of horse I'd be a little worried about him being about a dozen lengths off the pace going into the back stretch, and that will leave him a lot to do at short odds. I like Prince of Pharaohs. I thought that was a good effort last time in the Jerome, where he made a good run at Independence Hall on the far turn, wound up digging into dead heat for second. Should handle going from a mile to a mile and an eighth. You would think it's at least against this company, and I think he can parlay a good trip. So I'm going to give him the shot. I'm going to pick him over Shotsky, who I do think is a little bit vulnerable at short odds tomorrow in the Withers.
Interesting. All right.
And then looking at Gulfstream, obviously the feature there, Holy Bull, it attracted Tis the Law. Tis the Law is a horse, Steve, that has not had the cleanest trips in any of his races. Obviously, he was steadied and overcame traffic in his first two races at Saratoga. And then last time in the Kentucky Jockey Club, he was stuck down on the inside, down the back stretch behind horses, was sort of like turning his head a little bit, never really looked comfortable, made a good run, split horses, looked like he might win in upper stretch, but then he switched back to his left lead and got a little bit tired late and got beat about a length in third. Is obviously training well, it appears, in Florida for Barclay Tag for this debut. And it's a race where he could really fit a good trip, theoretically, in my mind, up close from the start. There's a little bit of speed to the outside, but and Etienne Indian, right to his immediate outside, will probably be going early. But, you know, he's going to be awfully tough to beat in there. A horse I'll watch for is Toledo, Chad Brown horse. He comes off a runner-up effort in a December 20th allowance. I don't know if he'll be good enough to beat his law tomorrow, but he could be a horse that could continue to move forward off the Holy Bull.
Yeah, just the fact that he's running him in there as a maiden kind of gives you an indication of, you know, how highly they think of him. So, of course... Yeah. Of course, Ron Paolucci and Bob Hester running a first time starter in a stake. So in the forward gal, so you just don't know. Did you look at the swale?
I did look at the swale, and to me, I think that race comes up everything that Jimmy Jerkins wants, because Greenlight Go in his first race where he went wire to wire last summer at Belmont, and then in the Champagne where he was on the lead setting the pace, I think he realizes he's going to have to be able to settle to excel at longer distances. You can go look at his Saratoga Special where he sat just off the pace and then really finished like with gusto, and starting off at 7 furlongs here. It's going to enable him, if he's not rank, to sit a good trip right off of some horses like Untitled. I think that horse, really exciting winner last time, is going to be showing speed with Jose Ortiz. But there is some other horses in there. I mean, Mischievous Alex added blinkers last time, looked awesome, went in that Parks Juvenile for John Service. And those two horses could really be mixing it up. And Chivalry, who's coming off 2 6-furlong wins, is going to be Ford. So, I think it's Greenlight Go's race to lose, because I anticipate him sitting right off of them, and he'll be able to make up ground quickly with his turn of foot, you would think, on the far turn. But it still shapes up, because some of these horses, I mean, you just don't know what Untitled. I mean, to me, if he shook loose right at the start with those ARTs, with the Empress Style in last year's Kentucky Oaks, where it looked like there was all this speed and she's clear early, he could be hard to run down.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that, especially at Gulfstream, a place where, you know, you look at the fields, you think, oh, okay, well, there's two or three other speeds, and then, you know, somebody blows the brake, somebody grabs a hold, and the next thing you know, you've got a loose leader, and it's over, and you know, you watch helplessly. I agree, I mean, my lean is Greenlight Go, but I've seen that happen too often, particularly at Gulfstream. James, turn the attention across the country and out here where I am at Santa Anita as we watch the main track open after Harrow break, and a lot of activity going on.
Yeah, and the Robert B. Lewis of I think the thought process was 1,000 words might wait for the San Felipe for his 3-year-old opener, but Baffert wound up sending him right from the Los Alfuturi, bringing him back 2 months later in this race tomorrow. Clearly the horse to beat. I like the fact he has good tactical speed. I think he'll sit a good trip. The horse that intrigues me, I'll be watching to see. I don't know, he probably won't be good enough yet to beat 1,000 words, but is obviously Tis a Magician. He's a horse that ran against Honor AP, second to him, came back, had a tough inside trip, was second, and then second again, 3 consecutive ones. But last time, I really liked that race. I liked the way he drew off in upper stretch. The runner-up in that race, Divine Armor, is in a race earlier in the card, race number 6 and race number 4, I believe. He's 8-5 on the morning line. He ran 3rd to 1,000 words and 1,000 words debut, ran 2nd to Tis a Magician. Could give you a good indication of the quality of that field he beat last time. And he's just a horse that looks like he has a lot of upside potentially for Richard Mandela.
Agreed, and we talked to Mandela about Tis a Magician. Actually, we've talked a couple of times at the end of last year, and then again already this year. And they've got aspirations. The thing that happened with 1,000 words. I was there at Los Al last month, and I was so impressed. Just physically.
I love his build, because you look at his female family, and Pomeroy's Pistol was a sprinter, and Pomeroy, you sort of think speed. But I look in there, and you got Point Given to Second Dam, sire of the second dam. His third maternal dam, it was Swearingen, who was a mile and an eighth, type horse. And he's just built, it looks like to me, to really relish longer distances. So, he's 4-5 for good reason. I didn't like High Velocity's effort in the Los Alpaturi. It wasn't off track, so perhaps you could give him an excuse for that. But I still think I look at him as a horse. He's going to, pursue that mucho gusto path potentially if the Triple Crown doesn't work out.
Well, the thing, and I'm just going through my phone to find the pictures I took of Thousand Words, because I just remember being, kind of struck by, physically, knowing how he was bred, and, with the fact we brought this up yesterday when we talked with Haskin, but he's much... He's got sort of a certain rangy look that that should be fine going further, and the way in which he fought, that's an unknown quantity that you can't until a horse is in that setting, and fighting off first sparring with High Velocity, putting him away, and then he didn't even, it's not as if he had a breather. I mean, he had Anno d'Or, on him, literally a stride after High Velocity started to drop anchor, and so he immediately had to face the outside pressure, and it brought it up, that at the time about how Pratt made sure that he brought him out a path to see the oncoming challenge, and he responded to that. I mean, that you can try to drill that into a horse in the morning, but that's more makeup than anything else. I mean, he's not brilliant. I mean, he's not a
even his debut was a race similar to that, where he turned back a challenge in the stretch to win by half length. So
now he's kind of, I won't say one paced, but he grinds at you, and that certainly on that long stretch at Los Al, that's fine. But this is a horse that I think there may be some candidates, James, that kind of pass him as we, as we get into February, March. There may be some horses that, that become more fanciful and catch a wave, the way horses do on the Derby trail. But this is a horse that has a style that plays very well in derbies. 21-1, 24-1, 24-2, 24-2. You run those kinds of quarters, that's very effective in Kentucky derbies. So I'm very enamored with Thousand Words.
And I'll give you a couple of quick horses. At Santa Anita and the San Pascual, I like King Abner in there. I like his improving form. He was a horse that was off for 18 months, came back in the claimant ranks, has steadily risen up. I liked his win two back in that Del Mar allowance. He comes off a good second, I thought, in that San Antonio. And no surprise to see Pratt pick up the mount. He's got a 5-furlong bullet work and a 6-furlong is in 1, 12, and 4. And then at Gulfstream in the Swedish Chance, Steve, I like Ivy Etsu, 10-1. I think she's going to be a good turf horse. I love the outside draw. I think she's going to be able to sit up close and could get the right trip.
Nice. And I think, 10-1?
10-1.
Yeah.
And one last second Friday play for you. Oaklawn Park today, number 6, 6th race, match play. Returns off as a fiddle off a couple races at Hawthorne. Won his last race at Oaklawn by 3.5 lengths. Loves the track. He's going to get the right trip. Number 6 match play in the 6th race.
Brian Williamson, and I, I just went over the late action as part of that Naira Oaklawn cross country pick 5. Just did that with Nick Tamaro, and every time I was looking through those late races, there was Brian Williamson with an interesting horse, and here he is with match play 12-1. So the 6th in the 6th at Oaklawn, and that's the return, the first last second Friday play, the LSFP. James, good luck this weekend, and we'll talk next week.
All right, thanks, Steve. Same to you.
We'll have to take the break because we can't go three straight hours without a break, because then it becomes impossible for Casey and Deja to edit the show. It has to do with hard stops and whatever. We'll take a break and come back for the last hour. Weekend preview at the races and brought to you by Twin Spires. And there was James Scully, for instance. We'll come back with Jeff Siegel, Ed DeRosa, and Mike Welch at the races at Santa Anita.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horseman, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I could be wrong. I could be right. Could be wrong.
We're back at the races. About almost 10 minutes into the third hour, and Jeff Siegel standing by, and Jeff Siegel was standing by next to me about 23 hours ago when we enjoyed a little chat with Bob Baffert, and